Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're joined by George Zahn. He's a broadcaster from the Cincinnati area, years of experience, and he's going to make some bold predictions, or maybe he has bold fears, for broadcasters in 2021. That's coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we're talking about everything from the microphone, I guess this one, to the light bulb at the top of the tower. I don't have one in here with me. Actually, we do have one. It's in the lobby. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, and I'm not in my usual Nashville studio, but I am in what I'm going to call the Telos Alliance studio, because there's the website right there. Thanks a lot, Telos Alliance, my full-time employer, for giving me a little bit of time on Thursdays to come and do this show, talk to you, and try to bring you some interesting and fun guests to talk about radio technology and radio tech. So it is our 533rd episode. Where am I? I'm in Greenville, Mississippi. I'm at the headquarters for some radio stations that are part of Delta Radio. We have, I don't know how many stations, I think we've got about 13 or 14 radio stations in Mississippi and Arkansas. And I'm in Greenville, Mississippi, where we run five of our stations out of this building. And this is our secondary, this is Studio B. So we do voice tracking out of here. We have done a morning show on our country station out of here. We don't do that anymore. We've got Moby in the morning. So anyway, that's where I am. Of course, it's an all AXIA audio over IP facility here. We've bought some stuff new. We had a few things used. And someday I'm going to take you through this console. This is actually a Frankenstein console, because it's got like two different color schemes of element audio in here. You know, hey, I got to pay for the stuff too. So, you know, sometimes I get it on the cheap. All right, that's enough about me. We're going to have a great show today with our guest, George Zahn. Let's bring George in. George, it's great to see you. I'm glad you could join us on This Week in Radio Tech. How you doing?
Well, Kirk, I'm thrilled to be on with you. And number 533, that's either my weight or your IQ. So it's a magic number. And your Frankenstein console has me in stitches. So I'll drop the puns now.
It's my Franken element.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Thanks. Good to have you on. And what intrigued me, folks, what made me think, hey, we ought to have George Zahn as a guest, is because George wrote an article in Radio Guide magazine. And a lot of you know that Raytop is a little, kind of a partner with This Week in Radio Tech. We promote Radio Guide. They promote us a little bit. And we kind of try to purloin each other's authors, people who are of interest to do some cool things to technology. And I was paging through my Radio Guide, and I saw this article by George Zahn. And George, I got to admit, I've been so busy, I still haven't read the article. I drove here last night, didn't get in until almost 1 a.m., and I just couldn't read while driving. The Mississippi State Police take a dim view of that. So does my insurance agent. And so I didn't get to read it, but we're going to get to talk about the headline. Was provocative: bold radio predictions for 2021. And that's...
Right. We already mentioned on the promo about a tsunami. There's been a tsunami already coming as far as audio, and it's affecting the way we listen. Actually, not the way you and I listen, but the way our consumers listen. And that's a really big deal. What the tsunami that's already here is podcasts. And we'll talk about Zoom and the fact that we're kind of dumbing down the sound during COVID, because frankly, what we're dealing with is the fact that we're settling for less and less quality audio. And that's one of the things that was part of this article, the fact that, yes, we're kind of doing what we can to be whatever we can during the quarantine. We're getting it done however we can, but it's also dumbing down some of the audio. And the goal, I think, is just as we hope to get back to a new normal, an old normal. I want to get back to the old normal. My goal is that in audio, we do the same thing. We get back to the old normal. Yes, there are going to be times where we might have to use Zoom or meetings or something like that, record from that and use that. But I'm hoping that we can get back to having things happen in our studios more often and make that the old norm that comes back, as opposed to the podcast. The podcasts are actually affecting the way everybody listens to radio now, simply because the demographic that most broadcasters are after, and all you have to do is listen to iHeartRadio. iHeartRadio, every break here in Cincinnati, at least, every break, they're promoting one or two podcasts in addition to all their regular commercials. So every break barely promotes what's going on the air, but they're promoting podcasts on iHeartRadio. The new consumer is utilizing that probably as much, if not more, than what's going on the radio side of it anymore. And the problem is a lot of the podcast audio quality is just not that good.
You know, this is, you're opening up a great conversation here. When we, as broadcasters, when we have been in studio, typically we have mic booms, we are decent quality mics. Somebody's a little bit concerned about, hey, even if you have a newbie, let's say you have some newsmaker, the mayor, or somebody with some expertise, you'll have somebody to say, hey, could you sit a little closer to the microphone? Could you get up on the microphone? And mm-hmm. we have somebody in broadcasting aware of making that audio sound better, maybe a morning show, maybe a news show, a public affairs show. I think the public radio realm is pretty familiar with this concept. There's a lot more talk and interviews on public radio typically. And I know we have, commercial news talk stations as well. Here and where I'm sitting in Greenville, Mississippi, there's Studio A down the hall, and our morning host, well, before COVID, we had plenty of people in and out, and we'd always get them right up on the microphone, right? We had the boom mic. It was easy to set an example for the host to, get up on the mic and to have the guests get up on the mic. And the room is reasonably good acoustically. It's not great, but it's reasonably good. But you're right. When we all moved home and started using the easy tools of the trade, like Zoom and Microsoft Teams, and I use StreamYard for a lot of things. We're using vMix call right now. We lost in broadcasting. Well, first of all, people are at home, so they haven't really thought about the acoustical treatment of the room that they're in. They may not have as good a microphone, and we can talk about, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to steal your thunder here, but we can talk about, to me, what is probably the most annoying thing about typical audio from home from people. Well, I was going to say non-professionals, but even some professional folks are guilty of this. And that is all of the, even if you're using a codec, whether it's a Telos Zip One or a Comrex a codec or something from Tyline, even if you're using a professional codec, it's still a lot of the same idea as if you're using Zoom or Microsoft Teams or something that also has a codec to get you across the public internet. And that is, when you've got room bounce, when you've got too much ambiance, when you've got echo and reverb in the room, and that gets into the microphone, the codec is going to try to code that as well. And that's going to make for a lot. They only have so many bits to code your audio, right? If you're making your codec code room noise and echo at the same time as the real voice, then you've really got a problem. Things start to sound really bad, and I think you get into the bad audio. That's what I hear. I hear room noise and reverb and echo whenever I'm on, a Zoom call. Not Zoom's fault. It's the people who, their microphone is 3 feet away, right? Instead of 3 inches away.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that we fight when we're dealing with people. We actually had to, last March, when everything was starting to be locked down, we were scheduled to do an 11-person panel discussion in an auditorium at Maple Knoll Communities, where I work, where they own our license for our station. And they have a beautiful auditorium. We have an audience. I go around and play Phil Donahue and let people ask questions of the panel and everything. Boy, I am dating myself there. But we would go around and do that. Suddenly, everything was locked down because we are in a healthcare facility. So we weren't able to open up the auditorium. We had to put everything on hold. We ended up doing it by Zoom. And the problem that we had there is we had some people who had decent microphones. I'm using just a basic Audio Technica that I'm using here right now that you and I have talked about in the past. This microphone at least beats any of the microphones that are built into your laptop or whatever you happen to be on, and at least gives you a fighting option to have better fidelity audio and also some degree of directionality. You were talking about the reverb in the room. I happen to be sitting in kind of a breakfast nook area in my home right now, and it's kind of the best place I could do around it. And so it works for what we do right now. And I don't know that I would do a lot of broadcasts from here, but it works for what we do. In fact, I'm in a choir and we actually record our choir doing individual lines of songs. And then I sew them all back together in video.
Wow!
And we've used this area as well. So it's pretty interesting to use it. But again, it's just the thought process of using a microphone that has a decent frequency response. We're not looking, it doesn't have to be a Neumann U87 on the other end, but it doesn't, and it should not ever be the mic that's just built into the laptop. It just does not give you the audio quality. And again, by the sheer laptop, if you're using the laptop video camera, you all obviously have to have it farther from you, and that causes problems.
We're going to get into some of your bold predictions here in just a minute, but I'm glad you brought up this topic about, your prediction was people will get used to this bad sound, and that's not good. It's so easy to have
a close, intimate sound, even when you're remote, even when you're at home. One of the ways, of course, is to use foam or other acoustic materials to reduce the bounce,
and there are kits, you know, of acoustic materials to do that. But the mic that you're using, I want to look at that one more time. Suncast, if you could pop him back up. That's a mic that actually the GFQ network recommends people use. This is an Audio Technica, and I forget the model number on that. Maybe Suncast can pop in if he remembers that model number. But it's both USB 2005 USB. That's it. Audio Technica 2005 mm-hmm. USB. It puts out USB, and at the same time, it also can put out dynamic. It's a dynamic mic. So it's powered by the USB cord. It has the sound card built in, so you get bi-directional audio on the USB. So right now, George, you've got your headphones actually plugged into the back of the microphone. Now, whoever thought of that, right? That's kind of cool. So the mic
but
is the sound card.
Yeah. When I was teaching microphones at Xavier University for 15 years, I never thought of ever having a microphone that I could monitor off of it. So it's pretty amazing stuff.
And that's a good point. When we're doing shows like this that are live, it's important that your own voice, that you hear it directly, that it doesn't go, you know, to New York City and back before you hear it. So, Suncast at the GFQ network is sending you mix minus. You're not hearing yourself on your feed from GFQ, but you are hearing yourself because the microphone mixes in some of you live with the USB audio coming from your laptop. And same for my end too. I'm using a Focusrite box here, and the Focusrite box turns around a bit of my mic audio right back into my headphones, so I can hear myself very nicely. Thank you very much. And then I'm hearing you coming back through my USB, and they get mixed together. So the solutions are there for easy use. And by the way, that mic you've got there sounds fine. It's about, what, $80, $90, something like that?
Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark. Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And one of the other things, I was just thinking about the latency. I have to tell you, one of the stories we used to do when I was in college radio, obviously, we wouldn't do this as professionals today, but in college radio, the big thing was if you had a rookie news reporter on and he was monitoring or she was monitoring the air signal, to throw the eventide in while they were reading and start to build the delay and hear them try to slow down. No, we haven't done that. I won't do that to any of my people now. We have a good place, but yeah, that was, you talk about latency. It's worse than the satellite latency that you get on television all the time. But you talk about hearing that slapback. It's the same thing of somebody trying to sing in a stadium. A lot of people, when they're in the stadium, that reverberation off the walls of the stadium is pretty amazing. So anyway, I didn't mean to take you that far afield, but.
Oh, no, you're right. And I people watching and listening to this show, I'm glad you heard what I said, and that, you know, you can't just listen to your mic going off site
and then coming back again. So what Suncast, what our producer sends to me, and what Zoom or other services send back to you is everything but you. It's a mix. There's a mixed minus. So your local device, your USB device, needs to do that mix right there. Now, if you're just using the sound card that's in your own laptop, for example, you may not get that. So it's kind of weird. You may not know how loud to talk because you don't hear yourself back. That's one of the problems with cell phone. You know how people tend to talk really loud into a cell phone because there's no side tone with a cell phone. They don't feed your mic back into the speaker or the earpiece. And so you don't know how, but I'm hearing myself loud and clear in my own headphones being provided by the Focusrite box that's next to my laptop. I can dial in how much I want. Same thing for the M Audio box that I use when I'm at my studio. But you're right about people getting used to the frankly awful sound that a lot of Zoom meetings have. Again, not because of a problem with Zoom. They do the best they can with echo cancellation or Google Meet or Microsoft Teams. But any of these softwares do what they can to reduce echo. But that's not a perfect technology. It's much better when people don't use open mic, open speaker, and when they can not use a mic that's literally 3 feet away from them, you know, built in the laptop or built into the webcam that may be sitting on top of the laptop. If you can get a mic anywhere near your mouth, you are much, much better off in helping the codec and helping the way other people hear you. So, George, your prediction that we're going to get used to bad audio quality, I hope that doesn't come true.
I hope it doesn't happen either. By the way, when your hands are out like that, is that digital audio at that point? Or, sorry, I had to ask. Sorry.
Bad joke.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm never coming back on this show, I bet. But I do want to... Exactly. The thing that I just wanted to say is we actually had an experiment with this. We had only ever done one Zoom recording on the air before. And basically we recorded it. We edited the thing down. We had to take multiple takes on things. We had some people on that 11-person panel that had never gone on Zoom before. It took us an extra 15 minutes just to get all 11 people lined up. But we just had one that happened for one of our volunteer hosts who was doing a show on real estate. And she was experimenting with recording Zoom on her computer. She had a great headset mic, very similar to what Kirk is wearing. And she also had two other sets of guests, two people on one computer, and their children, actually, who are also real estate investors, on another computer. And what happened there was they had done this so often before. I think they actually host a podcast. You could tell they were professionally prepared to do good audio over the internet or for broadcast. It turns out that through an emergency, the day after they recorded the test, we actually had to use it because of an emergency, and it played beautifully. Again, if you don't have garbage going in, you hopefully won't have garbage coming out, even with some of the artifacts that Zoom brings us. So hopefully we can get beyond Zoom eventually and not make that the be-all, end-all for getting interviews. But I agree, if we settle in and say Zoom for the long term will be the only way we get this. Now, I will say Zoom is a much more cost-effective way to do a long-distance interview with somebody. If you remember the old ISDN lines and things like that, my goodness, let's Zoom if we have to Zoom. Or, you know, whatever audio fits well. I loved dealing with you with the StreamYard yesterday when we first met, and it was fantastic. I was highly intrigued by the quality of that, so we may look into that for our own use in the future. But it really was good to hear people that were using the proper microphones and the proper audio equipment to make it work.
Thinking about, you mentioned the ISDN codecs, and of course they were not cheap. They were, you know, $3,500 per end for an ISDN codec, at least the ones from Telos, where I work. And then you had the ISDN line, the monthly cost there, and the long distance charge per minute of the phone call. And my point is, you're going to spend that all that much money on a remote audio connection, you're probably going to have a good microphone at the other end. So you've got all this invested in getting, you're likely to pay attention to the acoustics and the microphone wherever the guest and wherever the host is. Whereas Zoom is free in many cases. Microsoft Teams is near free. And we have these near free things. So we think we can just, you know, a lot of our guests, okay, think that they can just pop up their laptop and start talking and it's going to be okay. Well, you know, for broadcast, it may be okay for a coffee clutch or a quick meeting, but we all know how tiring it can be when that audio is bad. Hey, we're talking to George Zahn. George is, what do you do there at MKV?
I do everything but clean the toilets. We literally are a five person station operation. We're independent public radio. I'm the station manager, but I host programs. I do production. So we do a lot of things there. It's typical public radio where a lot of people wear a lot of hats. So it works pretty well. Can I make one real quick mention about the people on the other end? And this is, I know we're talking mainly to broadcasters, engineers, managers right now. But if you can encourage those people that maybe you communicate with a lot on Zoom to help them, and it may be somebody's eavesdropping right now who is a newsmaker who does a lot of Zoom things from their home, why not make that investment in a decent microphone, maybe a green screen, maybe some decent lighting? I'm still working my way through a lot of that. And Suncoast, thank you for helping me here today. But it really is important, if you're on the other end, if you're the person being interviewed, not to look silly and not to sound silly. And if you can make it sound better, your message is going to be better received, even if it's just a soundbite on a news story.
Good point. Good point. And you know what? Sometimes I've sent a USB headset off to people. And even though a lot of them have microphones that are really cheap noise canceling microphones, and they sound a little tinny, because that's one way to reduce noise is to get rid of the bass. But even an inexpensive, and by inexpensive, I mean a $30 or $40 USB headset, is usually a big improvement over the mic that's in the webcam or in the laptop. It ain't perfect, it's usually a whole lot better. Hey, you're in the Cincinnati area, aren't you, George?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay. And you have been, just to put some context here, you've worked in some Cincinnati radio, some rather big stations there, haven't you?
Sure. A long time at WCKY, one of the 50,000 waters here. Worked at WSAI radio, did sports broadcasting with the University of Cincinnati, been at public radio for more than, 25 years, my first round with WVXU, which was at one point owned by Xavier University. I'm now coming up on my 15th year with Maple Knoll, and this is this wonderful little radio station. It is little as far as power, but I was just mentioning the other day to someone that last week I was communicating with people from Australia, from Portugal, and from California. So the internet is a great leveler for even stations of lower power like we are. We're independent public radio, but we take great pride in what we do, and we fill, a very valuable niche. We do a lot of nostalgia. The station is owned by a retirement community, Maple Knoll Communities, and they're a continuous care retirement community. It was bought 25 years ago, 10 years before I got there, to be a companion for older people. And we've been able to advance that and change a lot of the music over the years, not to just be Glenn Miller, but Glenn Miller, Michael Bublé. We were playing Maroon 5, Doing the Way You Look Tonight. And we're playing 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s music now. So it's pretty interesting. I'll get off my shameless plug. So.
Sorry, no. Well, it's good to know your background. You've been in broadcasting a long time, and talking to you, it feels that way. Okay, we're going to come up with these bold predictions, more of the bold predictions, in just a couple of minutes. You are watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech, our 533rd episode. I'm Kirk Harnack, coming to you today from Greenville, Mississippi, in the studio, Studio B at Delta Radio here. We'll be right back. We're going to hear from our sponsor, Broadcast Bionics. Be right back.
Hi, I'm Phil from Broadcast Bionics in the UK, and we've been helping broadcasters and podcasters to work remotely for some time. But in 2020, this has become more of a necessity for many. X-Screen, Bionics Studio, and our other products can be fully functional via the internet on a VPN connection or RDP session. If you have any type of Telos VX, HX6 or IQ6, you may already be using the free edition of X-Screen 2, giving you a software interface to go alongside your VSET controller. The subscription edition not only adds a cloud database and unrestricted workstation licenses, but also allows the user to call screen using a USB headset. Bionic Talk Show, part of the Bionic Studio, also allows this. Up until now, it's mainly been used for remote broadcasts, but now more and more stations have call screeners and producers working from home or socially distanced offices. The teams can still collaborate, communicate, and deliver programming with the help of our tools. Many routers will have a VPN option. Your local IT specialist can help with this. Using a VPN, our workstation client software can be run on a home PC or laptop as if it was running on a machine at the studio. With remote desktop, the software still runs on a PC at the station. Simple port forwarding on your router may be all that's required to then control that PC and deliver the headset audio from another device using RDP, which is available as part of Windows. For technical help, our support team are on hand. You can email them on support@bionics.co.uk. Combined with our Anywhere and Skype TX for Radio products, broadcast quality audio can be delivered from contributors around the corner or around the globe. They can even instant message with the shared chat windows and see the now playing information from within the Anywhere remote web interface. For more information, go to bionic.radio. We're helping broadcasters around the world to adapt to the new normal with innovative tools from Broadcast Bionics.
Thanks to Broadcast Bionics for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech, and I got to encourage you to check out their products. Really, I like the way he says that, British. Innovative. Innovative. Yes, they're innovative indeed. I got to use the X-Screen program a few weeks ago at a big corporate event, and it was just amazing how well it worked, and I got to train somebody else on it. 15 minutes, trained fully. It went off just without a hitch. It was great. Broadcast Bionics at bionics.radio. All right, I'm Kirk Harnack at This Week in Radio Tech, our 533rd episode. George Zahn is our guest. And George, you made some bold predictions in Radio Guide magazine. Which one would you like to address first? Being a bold
prediction. Well, definitely the whole podcasting is making a change in the way people are listening. I actually talked, in fact, this was part of an article about 6 months ago, maybe 8 months ago, with Chris Hunneke from Futuri Broadcast Consultants. And he's actually advising some of his broadcasters who are after the younger demographic, which is where a lot of the podcasting is aimed at. Although more and more people my age are catching on to podcasts as well, but he's urging them to minimize some of the processing on air because people are now being trained to listen to this, as I call it, somewhat dumbed down, unprocessed, in some cases, almost unlistenable, in my opinion, because I'm a professional broadcaster. Some things sound like they're on a telephone, Kirk, and you can't have that. Now, there are other podcasts that are coming out that have sound effects and all kinds of things. Obviously, music is an issue because of rights, especially if you're streaming and podcasting with licensed music. But he is actually encouraging some of his broadcasters, especially for the younger demo, to think about doing less processing. Obviously, you have to use compression so you're not going out of your bandwidth, but he's actually urging less is more for a lot of these. And I think we might be seeing that coming in the future, to be honest with you. That might be one of the tsunamis that comes along that we were joking about before. The undercurrent of that tsunami is already the podcast, and it's affecting so many other things. So that's another thing is just a general processing. We can also talk later on about voice tracking. You were talking about voice tracking at the beginning of the podcast here, or the beginning of the broadcast. And to be honest with you, we'll never look at vacations the same way again. Voice tracking is important, and knowing what to do when you are voice tracking is helping. Many stations were already doing this, but I think more stations are learning that, hey, we can do this and maybe use people in other areas to make it work.
Wow. So much to think about and unpack here. You know, there is a communications attorney named John Garziglia. And John has been a guest on this podcast once. And John was actually a kind of a big time on air personality before he decided I can make more money being a communications attorney. So he did that.
Oh, yeah.
John's retired now. I was just talking to a friend about John yesterday. And John told my friend, I am bored out of my gourd. I need something to do. And so my friend said, I'm going to send you a microphone and you can do some voice tracking for our station and some imaging and so forth. And sure enough, he's doing it at home, sent him a mic and plugs it into his laptop. And now, so we actually, nobody knows it's John Garzigli because he's doing some imaging for one of our stations. But it is amazing. It does change the work paradigm, doesn't it? And where I'm sitting right now, one of our stations here, the morning jock on one of our stations is super famous, Moby in the Morning from Atlanta. And oh my gosh, he was so big time. And he's still recognized wherever he goes. And frankly, he's mobbed by the ladies wherever he goes.
He sounds like a whale of a broadcaster.
Yeah, Moby, yes, a whale of a broadcaster. But he does morning show for us. And it's just in time voice track. He's not on live, but he does, you know, he might do the tracks a half hour to an hour in advance. And he's got a nice little studio. He's got a little board. Nice mic. I mean, he knows what good audio quality is. We recently changed him to a different voice tracking system, and hey, old dog, new tricks. Took a little while to teach him that, but he just sounds great. So you're right about things changing, getting better, and you're right about podcasts being our competitor. It used to be that podcasts sounded really bad, typically compared to a broadcast. But it's getting to the point where a lot of podcasts are very professionally produced, and I put a new stereo in my older car here, and I punch between streaming services and over the air broadcast. I'm about to the point where over the air broadcast is processed harder than I like nowadays. So I'm kind of enjoying a little bit of a more breathable sound of some of the streaming service, including my own streaming, because we do light processing on my streaming.
Yes, you're absolutely right on that. It's fun to hear some stations that actually are taking a pre-processed feed that they're doing for their normal streaming. So if you go to your Echo Dot or whatever and say, play this station, you can. Sometimes you don't even recognize the AM voices because they've been so processed on the air, and then you hear them raw on the actual streaming feed, and it's like, is that the same person? And it's pretty amazing. And sometimes it's a refreshing change from the smushed down stuff that you get on AM radio and even on FM to a certain extent. I mean, obviously the classical stations are running far less compression than most of the other stations. But if you're a straight NPR news station, you're probably running pretty heavy compression. And so that's another thing is, do we need as much compression as we are? And if we do use heavy compression, are we now going to sound alien to young listeners that we need for the future? So that's one of the questions that I think we need to come to grips with in the coming months, if not years, about how this goes. How will the podcast be taken? Are they a fad? Is this a hula hoop? Or is this going to be something bigger? I, Kirk, if I could ask you a question, because you have multiple stations and you have people doing, I get to interview Kirk. Wow. But you have people who are doing voice tracking for you. How do you get the voice tracking into the system? Because one of the things that I know our operations people are always stressed about is making sure that the server that plays things on our air are isolated at all costs from anything on the internet so that you can't be hijacked and things like that. How do you guys deal with that, if I could ask?
Good question. And we do it a couple different ways. One way is that we have an ingest machine that actually looks to another machine that is running Dropbox. And most of our voice trackers throw their stuff into their own Dropbox or into accounts that we've created for them. Sure. And they get moved over here. And then once the ingest machine grabs them and ingests them, they disappear out of the Dropbox. In fact, that's how our voice trackers know that their cuts are safe in the automation playout system of the radio station. Now, this provides some separation. They're not both on the same exact. Well, there have to be some commonality because you got to transfer some files. Right. But
almost like a transformer isolated circuit, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know that we're 1,000% safe. But I don't know of any exploits that could take it, you know, that could do what we're doing here. And the only way to get a file into there is to put it into the high, and we come up with the passwords for our Dropbox accounts, and they are pretty secure passwords. So I think we're okay there. And then the ingest machine ingests them and pops them onto a NAS for the automation systems then to go grab and play out. We have another automation system that has its own built-in voice tracking module, and you go in with HTML. There's no file transfer that a person has access to, and the HTML, I believe, is actually done through a proxy. So you're not, even though you're connecting, you're not actually connecting to the machine itself. There's a proxy that it goes through, and when you record your voice track, you're actually not recording it on the final machine right then. It's actually being recorded in the browser, and when you get done with your voice track, then there's an automatic file transfer browsy through the proxy to the machine that's going to play it back out. So a couple different methods there. If a person is worried about, hey, does remote voice tracking open me up to any vulnerabilities, it's best to talk to that vendor and see, hey, do I need to do anything different? Is there some way to firewall this better or to have some kind of a proxy server in the middle? Are you putting me at risk with your methodologies? So these are great questions to ask. Indeed. Good question.
And that's also one of the things that is part of the bold predictions is as we look at more and more voice tracking, the same gentleman I spoke about, Chris Hunneke, used to work for Cumulus, and he was the voice for something like 90-some stations, I think, around the country, voice tracking out of Cincinnati here when he was working for Cumulus. And I'm sure they had a great way to get the basically his audio to everybody, but we're a much smaller operation, and I'm just wondering, because we're actually looking at upgrading, we're currently running wide orbit, upgrading our automation in the next few years just through the life expectancy of the computers, the server, and everything. And that's been one of the big conversations that we've had, just as an individual station, and here you're dealing with a group of stations doing that. So I was quite curious to ask you a question, so thank you for that. You talked about the environment.
George, if you could for a sec, one thing, working with a major manufacturer as I do, Telos Alliance, so often we are called in to a potential customer, usually a big customer with a real big IT department. They have security. They understand security. So maybe it's even a state level broadcaster in a large foreign country. So you get what I mean. They understand the risks, and they have good questions about what are you doing for security. And honestly, we've learned things. We now are implementing things that hadn't even been thought of 5 years ago that are now becoming more and more required. So if your automation vendor, whoever it is, if they're of any size at all, they are probably answering these questions from other big broadcasters who say, look, we don't buy anything unless it does this and this and this and follows these standards and this safety, and it's got to be tested against these vulnerabilities. We're going to do penetration testing on it. So it's worthwhile to ask your broadcast. And I think most of the time this falls down probably at the local station implementation level. The station just does what they've always done, or they open a bunch of ports, or perhaps weak passwords, or whatever it may be, and open themselves up to problems. So talk to your automation vendor about how do I be safe, and should we predict that more stations will be hit by ransomware this year?
I hope not, but it could happen. And I'll tell you this, I think as a manager, I'm very grateful that my operations manager is also an Apple certified technician. He has a great computer background, and I think we're seeing this more and more in broadcasting. The traditional engineer, in many cases, has gone by the wayside through sheer attrition of losing some of these people to the actuarial tables. Now we're looking at people who are coming in with far more computer background, and frankly, as station management, we need that. We need to have the people who can warn us where the pitfalls are. I'm an old dog. I have to learn the new tricks, as you were talking about. And I've got a younger operations guy who keeps me on my toes about that. And it's really important for stations to consider that. And if you don't have an IT person or an IT department, maybe to have a consultation so that you don't become a ransomware victim.
You've got a couple stories to tell coming up about Dr. Jim King and a POTS codec getting pushed back into use. We're going to have that. Hold on. And you noticed some interesting audio problems with the Jimmy Fallon show. And they, you told me about this. I was shocked, that this could get out of the theater in New York City. So we'll talk about that coming up in just a minute. It's Kirk Harnack and my friend George Zahn. George wrote an article in Radio Guide. You might want to go get it and read it. You can read it online at radio-guide.com. Or if you get the paper edition, the print edition, the dead tree edition of Radio Guide, like I do, then you can read it there too. George Zahn and bold predictions for 2021. I still got to hear a couple of bold predictions here, George. Our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcasters General Store. You can get everything you need for your broadcast facility from BGS, and including the amazing Vox Pro. Check it out. We'll be right back.
Yo, what's up? Live from NAB 2018. Hey, it's Caden. You need to check out Wheatstone and Vox Pro 7.1. The upgrades are amazing. If you're a jock, if you're a talent, producer, whatever, morning show, everyone knows Vox Pro, everyone uses Vox Pro, everyone loves Vox Pro, but now the features for this year, 2018, on 7.1 are amazing. If you're using version 4, 5, 6, and you go to 7, this is exactly what you're missing right here. The features are a game changer. It's going to cut down your editing time by like 80%, depending on what you use Vox Pro for. And with version 7.1, introducing unlimited Praktik button bars right here, hotkeys right here. I'm gonna show you coming out of a song. Bad things. It's a lot of bad things that they wish and wish and wish. So you're coming out of your song? Yeah. Start your next song right here. It's basically an entire production room right on Vox Pro. So it's the Vox Pro we know and love with a ton more features. And now this is the ultimate game changer right here. Effect macros. So instead of hitting your effects button bar and going up here using your mouse for every effect, you do it right here with one click of the mouse, and you're going to cut down your editing time by about 80% without even touching this new sexy black controller. Check it out right here, Wheatstone Vox Pro 7.1 at NAB in Vegas 2018.
And you can get Vox Pro at Broadcasters General Store. Their number, you give them a call at 352-622-7700. See how I have that memorized? And you go to bgs.cc, their website. They got everything that you want for your broadcast facility. They have a lot of stuff for TV stations, too. Broadcaster General Store, they work. I was just in a meeting with them, actually, yesterday, and the folks at BGS just really work hard to keep up with the latest technologies and to make sure that they have stuff in stock, ready for you, or they know exactly how long it'll take to get to you. I love them. Broadcasters General Store. All right, we're talking to George Zahn on this episode of This Week in Radio Tech. And George, you've got a couple of interesting stories to tell, and then maybe we'll get to another bold prediction. Maybe these stories involve bold predictions, huh?
Well, and I would say, Kirk, the bold prediction is the fear. Maybe it's a bold fear that I have of the dumbing down of audio and the lack of attention to detail. And to tell you two quick stories, I'll make it very quick about late night television. We talked about the fact that you need to be aware of what your sound is like when you're podcasting or when you're recording. Well, this happened actually on the Stephen Colbert program when he was doing a Zoom conversation or some kind of a linked conversation with Julie Andrews, and she was promoting some podcast that she was doing. She grabbed her camera and walked across the room and opened up a closet that was full of towels and pillows that I guess one of her family members helped her put together. In the middle of it was a microphone and a computer. So she actually understood the whole sense of trying to get the acoustics at least as dead as possible so you didn't sound like you were broadcasting from in the middle of a bathroom or something. That was hilarious. I just loved it. And the fact that she was so honest about it, I think we can all learn something from that. Here's a lady who is a world-renowned star and showing us her closet full of computer gear, but also towels and pillows to help deaden the sound. The other one, and I misspoke this yesterday when you and I were chatting before the show. It was actually on the Jimmy Kimmel show out of LA. This happened. Yeah. This happened. And one of the things that I do is I'll listen to a kind of a news briefing off of my Echo Dot when I go to bed at night. And usually I'll put on a couple of newscasts. Then I'll put on a couple of the the monologues, if you will. Jimmy Fallon, I usually listen to, and then I'll listen to Jimmy Kimmel. And one night, and they actually repeated this, which got me. Now, again, if you were listening on a stereo TV, it might not have registered with people. An audio engineer would say, hey, this is, there's something wrong here. I might not know what it is. But basically, there was an out-of-phase signal. And all I can guess is either on the mixing console, there's a phase reverse switch on many mixing consoles, or the microphone that they were using for Jimmy Kimmel was wired 180 degrees out of polarity. So when you heard it in mono, you heard this faint whisper of Jimmy Kimmel's voice. You couldn't make out much of what he was saying unless he emphasized a word and got loud enough that he was picked up on the PA in the room. The audience mics were picking up everything, but you could barely hear Jimmy. Except when the people laughed, you could hear the laughter perfectly. It was beautiful. And so what happened was when all that got mixed down to mono to come out of the Echo Dot, you could tell that somebody obviously missed along the way that there was an out-of-phase microphone. And when it's your host, that's kind of bad. Now, again, with stereo TVs, maybe not as big a deal. But my bold prediction is that we're finding more and more people who are less and less vigilant about good audio for television and for radio. And that's going to happen. There were stories that were legion when I was starting out at Xavier University at an NPR station where they would use a coincident pair of mics, basically two mics to record an orchestra to prevent phasing. Yeah. Actually, that was the best I looked in this whole broadcast. But the bottom line was that the microphones, if the cabling, if the actual XLR cable was wired 180 degrees out of phase in stereo, it would still sound somewhat acceptable, might sound a little hollow, but when you mixed it down onto a mono radio, if somebody was listening on a clock radio back in the day, you heard virtually nothing because of the coincident pair of microphones. And that same kind of thing just happened with Jimmy Kimmel. One of the earliest stereo records of Nat King Cole, if you can find it, find one of the early Mona Lisa recordings. It was recorded by a gentleman named Lee Gillette. He was the producer. And frankly, in stereo, it sounds great. Nat sounds a little hollow, but it becomes a karaoke record long before karaoke records were popular back in the day. So if you listen in mono, his voice is gone. You hear a little bit of reverb coming off the reverb unit or the spring reverb that they were using. And frankly, it becomes that. So in those early days, we could argue that it was naivete. It was something we didn't think about. So maybe my bold prediction should have been bold fears for what we may be facing. And I do hope that whether people are learning through universities or through vocational schools, that there is still some degree of attention to broadcast quality. Also, don't ever throw out the old stuff. I can tell you that in a bit, but I look like you had another question.
You mentioned that the Echo. And am I behind the times, or is this actually the latest Echo right
here? That's the latest one. Actually, Ray pulled that as a graphic for me. I've got still the one that looks like a hockey puck. So I'm
me too.
I'm dating myself, but all I can think of is Don Rickles because he called everybody a hockey puck.
There were some years in FM radio that went by us where we would talk about mono compatibility. And I fell into this trap. I thought, well, is everybody, I mean, very few people are listening on a clock radio with a single speaker. I mean, isn't that the only mono thing around nowadays? Isn't everything else a stereo receiver, whether it's in your car or a boombox? There was a time, it seems like, maybe in the 90s and the early 2000s, where I thought listening in mono was actually an odd thing. But guess what? There's your mono device right there.
Exactly.
When
I was teaching at Xavier back in the day, I tried to explain to people the importance of mono compatibility. Now, that's a number of years ago. And at that point, the figure was something where around 50% of the radios were still clock radios, or, you know, it might be somebody in a security office listening on some radio they brought in from home. The transistor radio is long gone for the most part. But we're back to it again. You are absolutely right. We are back to mono compatibility. And again, I think some people just aren't checking it anymore. And so maybe it is bold fears for the year.
And since we don't, we're not dealing anymore with tape phasing, when we do have a mono compatibility problem, it's typically something's really wrong, 180 degrees out of phase. We, you know, somebody screwed up, and it should be easy enough to find. I don't know about you, but I used to, when I was a teenager, I worked at a Radio Shack store, and sometimes I'd walk through stores when they still had component stereo systems, walk by, and you just hear, whoa, that's out of phase. You can just tell it, right, by walking by it and realize I get in the center and the bass goes away or drops significantly, right? But we hardly think about that much anymore. Now, if you're doing live sound, doing live mixes, sure, you want a phase meter. You want to know that the things you're bringing up are wired correctly, that they're wired in phase. So you got two mics, you know, and they're not going to be out of phase unless you want them to be out of phase.
More quick story out of school. I'm sorry, I'll watch our time here. But one more quick story out of school. When I was learning to mix music, and I've mixed Riders in the Sky, all the Riders Radio Theaters here in Cincinnati, when we recorded them with a lot of the major country music stars that would come up with them, and have done a lot of live music recording, I was sent off to an NPR workshop back in the 80s. And there was a guy there, his first name was Neil, and I can't remember the last name for the life of me, but it might've been Neil Muncy, something like that. He was there to teach us what out of phase signals sounded like. And he actually intentionally brought in stereo recordings that were out of phase. And he also was trying to patent something. It was a little red light that you could put in your studio called the Oops light. It was out of phase signal. Oops. And if that light went on, yes, exactly. And I thought, this is a stroke of genius. It never really took off. But, if you're not looking at the mono meter on one of the old Autogram consoles or whatever old console you had, it was great. You would think you would have this little red light that would alert you that there was a problem. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot, and now I can actually hear things. If I'm listening to a piece of audio that might come to us from a musician that might be something that we're thinking about putting on the air, and maybe it was home recorded or recorded at a small studio, I've caught a couple of things that have been out of phase, and got back to the artist and said, and I don't know if I would have that had it not been for that training many, many years ago when I had a lot less gray hair. So, one of the other things I promised was the Jim King story.
We're
a public radio station, and you want to talk about old school. I mean, I talk about us being a nostalgia station. Well, we brought back nostalgia technically, and I know some people are going to go, what are they doing? Well, I get a call. Dr. Jim King was my former mentor at Xavier University. He is a major fan of our public radio station. He helps us fundraise on the air. During quarantine, he's older. We didn't want him necessarily traveling a lot coming in. He would have to make about an hour and a half to 2 hour round trip to come in to pitch for a couple of hours with us during our fund drives for public radio. Well, he called me one day and he said, you know what? I just saw a couple of Comrex Matrix units that are on sale for about $300 a piece. These are the old Potts Codec Comrex Matrix units. And he said, do you guys have a copper line anywhere? Because our facility is almost totally VoIP. Mm-hmm. We checked and we still had one extant copper line. We plugged a phone into that circuit and it worked. And we're like, oh my goodness, this is like amazing. He paid on his own dime. He paid to have a copper line put into his. And so what we do is he joins us via the Comrex. We're talking 25, 30-year-old technology. We're actually broadcasting with him. He sounds like he's right in the studio with us. Again, professionals will know it's not quite right, but it still beats a phone. The other thing that we do then is we use Zoom as a visual contact so we can see each other's faces. Mm. And since we're plugging for phone calls for the pledge drive, we actually have another webcam that is part of the Zoom meeting that's just trained on a phone bank where he can see the lights light up when the phones ring. And it's really cool. I mean, we're using this ancient technology. So again, a bold prediction that I would like to make is, or maybe a bold hope would be, don't give up on old technology. Now, it had to be the right place at the right time with the copper, but it really was a cool thing.
Yeah, it's good to have old backups, because sometimes you can press them into use. Absolutely.
Yes, exactly.
We've got, let's see, I think we got just a couple more things maybe to chat about and a tip of the week coming up. It's This Week in Radio Tech, our 533rd episode. Kirk Harnack here. We're taking a break from the deep tech, talking about fun tech and George Zahn's fears about audio in 2021, that we're getting a little lackadaisical. Of course, part of it is, you know, the tools that we're required to use. It's hard to get everybody on board with great quality audio, but, you know, it's worth trying, because we don't need, broadcast needs to be the home of professional sounding audio all the time. Certainly there are some stations that are absolutely hallmark at doing this, but we all need to make sure that our game is up to it. Our game is good. Hey, This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by one audio company that I have a lot of respect for, and that's my friends at Angry Audio. Angry Audio, their slogan is so good. Don't get mad. Get angry. AngryAudio.com is the website. And this little gizmo here, this is called their headphone gizmo. Now, at Angry Audio, they got several choices for headphone amplifiers, including, you know, you can get the Studio Hub equipment that they still have that. But this particular headphone amplifier right here, I like this one. It's up front here. There's your volume control, obviously. There it is, volume control, obviously. And two kinds of headphone connectors, the quarter inch and the eighth inch headphone connector. And then on the back, you've got the Studio Hub standard for the the RJ45 connectors. You've got a loop through here. So you've got audio coming in, and then you can loop it through to audio going out to go to the next headphone. You might have a few of these, you know, around the underside of your tabletop in your studio when we get back from COVID times. And you can inject power here as well with a 16-volt AC power adapter. By the way, you can also power these from DC power that's coming over the RJ45 connector in your Cat5 cable. So you can inject it at one place and carry it on to the next and to the next, power several of these headphone gizmos. And a way to wire these things, of course, is with Cat5 cable. You can get your shielded Cat5 cables from the folks at Angry Audio. They have just a ton of these shielded Cat5 cables. You can also, of course, get the RJ45 adapters. These are the famous Studio Hub adapters that let you go from XLR or quarter-inch tip-ring sleeve or bare wire, even RCA cables, into the format of the Studio Hub Plus format on the RJ45 connector. These make wiring your studio super fast. By the way, you can get a discount on these, so you're not going to pay more than the off brands. These are the real Studio Hub stuff. And, you know, the Studio Hub went really, really a long way to make these things super high quality, good strain relief here. And the technology of getting quality audio stranded wire into an RJ45 connector, that took some doing. And the folks at Studio Hub are still absolutely the best at it. So check that out from angryaudio.com. Go to their website. Studio Hub is back. They brought it back for people like us who love to wire with Studio Hub. Check it out at angryaudio.com. Hey, This Week in Radio Tech is also brought to you by my friends at Max Connect Wireless. Look, I got one right here. And if my internet here at the studio wasn't great, I was going to be using this. Turns out we got good internet here today at the studio. Max Connect Wireless. And I want you to hear this message about Max Connect.
With all of the recent cybersecurity attacks against large corporations, we were looking for a product that would give us the ultimate in security at our transmitter sites and as well as with our broadcast equipment. Max Connect fits the bill very well. Its greatest security feature is the fact that it gives you a single static IP address. Using this single static IP address allows us to close hundreds of open ports on our firewalls across the company and restrict access to only the Max Connect IPs. This has greatly reduced our exposure to the World Wide Web and made us much more secure moving forward. It has also given us the ability to expand as needed in a secure fashion.
Good words from John Takak at Radio 1. And here's one of the MaxNet Wireless 4G LTE modems. And it does have a single IP address. And if I move my finger, you would know exactly what it was. Fixed IP address on the public internet. That's a big advantage if you need to remote into it. Max Connect Wireless, it's spelled funny, so there it is, and you can look in our show notes if you want a clickable link into Max Connect Wireless. Thanks a lot, Josh Bone at Max Connect, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. We're just about out of time, but George Zahn is coming back now, and he's got a tip or a story or something for us, something that was worth waiting through the commercials for.
Well, John? I certainly hope so. But I do want to make a quick comment, if I could. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but
absolutely.
We have worked with organizations like the Broadcasters General Store, BGS. And when you do hear these sponsors on, whether it's a podcast, a broadcast, public radio, whatever, be sure to tell those people that you appreciate and give them the business. It really means a lot to keep communication like this going. It is so important. So my last tip of the day is one that really wasn't in my article per se, but it kind of comes back to something near the end of the article. And Kirk, I was talking about the whole idea of knowing how to back things up. Do we have backups for programs? Here's what I would recommend every station do. And I'm talking more as a manager now than as an engineer. So forgive me for putting on the manager hat. But I would urge everybody, as a tip of the day, to think about, actually don't think about it, just do it. Have an emergency meeting, not one that you call on a short term, but a meeting about what do we do in a disaster? What happens if we lose this person, that person? Who is the backup? Where are the backup programs? What can we access from home if our facility is ever shut down due to a natural disaster, a fire? Nobody wants to think about this. It's the same thing as buying funeral plots and buying insurance. Nobody wants to think about this. But given what we've just gone through this last year, how can we make ourselves better and better prepared for the next issue that might come up? Because a lot of people had to scurry really fast to make something work during the pandemic. I don't think many of us saw it impacting our plants the way it did, and ours was greatly impacted. But at the same time, I think it's really a good idea to have that meeting with the key staff that you have and talk about what do we do if we can't get into our plant? What do we have as a backup? What can we broadcast? Do we have a backup at the transmitter? Those are some of the things that I think need to be discussed, that again, we all get so busy with our daily lives and our daily tasks. Think about the future. What have we learned from the pandemic? And what can we do in the future, not just to keep our audio good, but to keep our product consistent?
That is great, great advice. And I would add a dovetail that sometimes we don't have that conversation because we're afraid that the answers might be really big and really difficult. And you know what? When you get smart people together, you might find that you have staff members that have ideas for solving this that you didn't have, or might be willing to do things that you didn't think they were willing to do to help solve this problem. You might find that, hey, I've got a friend in IT who actually is a backup expert, or I know a way that we can that we can get temporary internet here or there. Of course, MaxConnect Wireless, but you don't know what people know until you have the conversation. At first, they might be difficult conversations, but you have those conversations, and you can get people thinking about what do we do if the station burned down? What do we do if the studio had a flood? What if we do if there was we're next to a railroad track right here. What if there was a noxious gas leak, right? And we had to evacuate. Could we still operate the station remotely? Great.
And
great,
remember,
advice, George.
I was going to just say one last thing. Remember the incubation period for good engineers. We had an engineer that we lost a few years ago that I worked with for years. He worked for WEBM with a noted fireworks here in Cincinnati. He was our engineer for WVXU and for a while for WMKV. We would go to Jay. His name was Jay Crawford. And we would go to Jay and we'd say, Jay, we want a box that does this. And we would explain it to him. And he'd kind of look askance and he would go, 3 days later, Jay walked in with a homemade box that would do exactly what we needed. It was amazing what the engineer could do. All he needed was the time to work it out. He probably started thinking about it right that moment that we brought it up. But again, trust the people. as a manager, hopefully you're not the smartest one in the room. You got a bunch of other people who should know what they do. And what happens is sometimes they have really, really good ideas that you may not have thought of. And it doesn't have to be your idea to be a good idea.
Bingo. Oh, man, we need to put that on the wall in big letters, a poster.
Very good.
George, this hour has flown by and I have enjoyed speaking with you immensely. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom and humor with us on This Week in Radio Tech.
Thank you, Kirk. Thank you to Suncoast as well for the keep me on the straight and narrow here for the most part.
Good deal. Good deal. And we hope to have you back again sometime. And speaking of sometime, next week, we have a very interesting show. It is about World Radio Day and the way that a bunch of students from Hofstra University got together to pull it off and make an incredible day-long broadcast happen. They solved human problems, communication problems, around the world time zone problems, and technical problems. It is a great, great show coming up. I know because, well, we've already kind of talked about it. It's coming up next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Big thanks going out to Suncast, our producer for This Week in Radio Tech. Appreciate very much your help on this. And Andrew Zarian, the founder of GFQ Network. Thanks again to Andrew Zahn. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.